Hello there, and welcome to Open Class number 48. Hope you're doing really, really well. We have 4 messages to go over today. And before we do, actually have a kind of like not an announcement really, but I want to share something with you. Let's see if I can do this. I think I've mentioned this before, but I am writing on another book that I'm going to call This is Natto. Here's a kind of a little sneak peek of the manuscript. Now, check this out. So first I go over this roadmap and then some what I call ways, which is like all of you, I think, are pretty familiar with the way of befriending wakefulness, which is doesn't show up here for some reason, but it's here, and the untangling way, the way of detective work. And then a lot of these things I call concepts, like magical moments. You probably heard him talk about speed bumps, and what else do I often talk about? The type two concern, win-lose thinking, and those type of things. So I'm hopeful that this will be more of, you know. So I think for anyone that just wants to learn, you know, has trouble sleeping, I think Set It and Forget It is a very approachable, like a very easy read. But This is Natto, I hope will be more of like, and sort of like a little bit more, you know, it's a lot of smiling. I think I try to inject fun in it, but a little bit more authoritarian. Like this is like, you know, presenting the philosophy, the school in a very kind of like in a structured way. This is Natto. But anyway, I'm just kind of sharing that that's happening. It's probably going to be out in maybe a couple of months, maybe 2 months or something like that. But what I want to do is actually start to use this more structured teaching in open classes and whenever I teach. So I'm going to try to do that so to make it more clear how myself and Coach Michael think. So anyway, I'm going to try to do that today. So with that said, let's jump right in. As you all know, nothing here is medical advice, just general thoughts and comments that I hope will be helpful to anyone that's tuning in. Now, Michelle Rosenthal, you know, started talking actually with Coach Michael on Twitter and sent this question. Watching the vid, this was an open class she was watching. Doesn't insomnia interfere with the natural repair process of the body? So without that time, even though there may not be directly related studies, can't we infer that the immune system becomes compromised, which would lead to chronic issues? Sounds like the discussion here is like whether insomnia causes any chronic issues. And here's the thing, to Michelle and anyone else out there, I've actually written a book on this topic called Why We Don't Sleep, Why We Don't Sleep, not to be confused with Why We Sleep. But as I already knew that there was no support whatsoever for short sleep or insomnia causing any health issues. But, you know, doing the literature review for that book, Why We Don't Sleep, that just confirmed what I already knew, that there's not a single study that shows that short sleep or insomnia causes any problems with immune system whatsoever. There is nothing out there pointing to that. It's all kind of smoke and mirrors. If you find this study like a headline, you know, insomnia causes problems with the immune system, and you actually read the article, you'll find that there was some kind of a mouse model where it saw like lower IgG levels in half of the mouse that were genetically mutated to do this. So there's no evidence whatsoever to that. So I just want to say that there's no evidence that short sleep or insomnia causes any immune systems or chronic issues for that matter. By the way, I always like to mention this nice study from this Australian group, Lack and Lovato are the names of the first authors. Actually, the only two authors of that study. It came out in 2019. Where they looked at 36 million people, this meta-analysis, including 36 million people, looking at those who had insomnia, those with no insomnia, life expectancy exactly the same, no problems there. So I hope that helps, Michelle. And any questions, you know, send another tweet. Or by the way, anyone has a question that you would like to be, discussed here in open class, check out our webpage, thesleepcoachschool.com. There's a link on top where you can submit questions, so please do that. Very well. So let us jump forward. This is from Ellie, who has a couple of questions. Let's read this. I have a few questions here. Do you think getting rid of the things that remind an insomniac of their past with insomnia is helpful? Should we act like nothing ever happened and keep purchasing the same things as before? I find that when I go through my stuff, I'm reminded of times where I bought this thing to try to help my insomnia or reduce my anxiety, etc. I also developed some pretty bad health anxiety shortly after. The big one, and Ellie, when she says the big one, means that often the first, but it doesn't necessarily need to be the first, but that really intense episode of insomnia that a lot of people remember as kind of the big one, you know, the one that you're afraid is going to happen again. So anyway, she bought some things and developed some pretty bad health anxiety shortly after the big one, which caused me to buy things that I thought would preserve my health from the lack of sleep, more control. She was going towards more control that time. I just have a hard time getting rid of them because part of me is still attached to preserving my health. Sorry, this is a bit of a mess of a question, but what do you think about it all? Another question is, 2 days ago, I was reading about how sleep is an autonomic function. And then I started reading about other types of autonomic functions and saw that swallowing is one of them. So I started to get a bit anxious, started to overthink it. And I felt like this new worry could become as bad as my insomnia if it actually develops. I know this whole situation was 100% due to the anxiety because it happened in a matter of minutes. I won't let it bother me. But for the future, how can I stop being so vulnerable to these kinds of things? Very, very well. Good questions. And, you know, just for myself here, so I remember it. First one is kind of like, should I get rid of the things that I bought that kind of remind me of insomnia? And how about other things like swallowing? Could those become an issue too? All right. So actually, I want to introduce, let me write this down here. I want to introduce a concept that I think I'm going to talk about more soon, but I found a counter effort. Okay. Let's do this, counter effort. So a sleep effort is anything you do with the intent and purpose of producing sleep, such as installing like blackout curtains or something like that. And we know that sleep is a passive process. You know, we sleep well when we're not trying to do anything. You know, remember that friend of yours who sleeps fantastic? They do that because they don't know why, or they don't do anything in particular. That's why, right? So a sleep effort is not helpful. The more you try to sleep, the more problems you have, right? But how about this? When you realize that I bought this thing to help me sleep, that was a sleep effort, and now I want to get rid of the thing that was a sleep effort, now we're running into what's called counter effort. We are trying to avoid a sleep effort, and trying to avoid a sleep effort in itself becomes an effort. So this is a counter effort now, right? So, you know, the more you try to get rid of the thing that you did to try to sleep better, well, then you're stuck in the same type of thing. There's still effort there. You're still trying to do things with the ultimate goal of producing more sleep. So I want to say this, Ellie, that kind of like be honest with yourself and think about why are you thinking of getting rid of these things? Is it because, you know, deep down inside, you hope that if you get rid of these things, you're going to kind of forget about the insomnia and sleep better? Well, guess what? You're on that path of effort again. You're trying to do things. This is actually a counter effort. All right. If you, on the other hand, if you have no attachment, whatever to these things, then like, I just want to throw them away. Of course, just throw them away. But I don't think that's the case, because then if that was the case, you wouldn't ask this thing. So I think, yep, this is a counter effort. And then you might think, so, okay, I got to get rid of this counter effort. I can't have counter efforts. I don't want to do any counter efforts. Well, then again, now this is kind of like a counter effort. So you see that it all, like, the goal is always the gentle way, the way of no pressure, not trying, not exerting an effort, right? So how do you do that? You're like, you had efforts, now you're into like counter efforts. How do you go in a different direction? Well, I think it really is awareness and self-kindness. That combination is magical, you know? Just understanding that, okay, these things I was thinking about, that's another way of kind of trying to produce sleep. And I should probably not do them. That's probably best for me. But if I do them, I'm not going to pressure. I'm not going to be hard on myself. I'm just going to be aware of it. And if I do something that probably wasn't in my best interest, then I'm going to be kind to myself, you know? Awareness plus self-kindness. And what happens is, the magical thing with this is that without trying anything, you start automatically making the right choices. You're going down a very nice path by simply being mindful of what you're doing. So I hope this was helpful to you, Ellie, and anyone tuning in. This is a counter effort. And the second question here was a sort of similar one. Let's just go back and check it, because autonomic functions. That was the one. So Ellie said that, another autonomic function in the body, one that is kind of automatically regulated by the body, is swallowing. And it's a good example because, yes, surely, if you start really, really paying attention to every time you swallow and you start sort of like manipulating that and controlling that, then that causes, that could potentially cause trouble. I've never heard of anybody who's like really had a lot of struggles with swallowing because they try to control swallowing, but the in theory it's the same process. Like there's breathing, for example, is completely typically completely autonomous, like the body just takes care of that. But you often hear people say things like, I forgot to breathe, and they're really scared about that. Sometimes I just forget to breathe. That is actually not accurate. It is that they somehow started to pay attention to their breathing, and they started to like take it over like voluntarily, and then they stop breathing and they think something happened. So yeah, that's the short, I think the insight here is, yes, there are a lot of autonomous functions, and if we start to try to manipulate them and control them, or think something is wrong with them, we can end up having some struggle with them. But I mean, nothing serious with that. Like, you're always going to be able to swallow. It's just going to be like a little uncomfortable if you think about it all the time. But it's the principle is true there, that there are a lot of things that if you delegate to the body, if you kind of trust the body can take care of this. I don't need to interfere with this. If you delegate to your personal swallowing assistant, delegate to your personal sleep assistant, delegate to your personal breathing assistant, or whatever, then you'll do really, really well. Hope this helped, Michelle. No, I'm saying Ellie. And please, any follow-up questions, let us know. Cool. So let's move forward here. And the next question was a comment, I believe actually from today, from John Monk. And we'll see if we can add some more NATO concepts here. Okay, let's read this. Thank you guys for great answers. Anytime, John. For a few days now, I gave up monitoring my symptoms, and the tiredness, grogginess seems to lessen. I think all of my symptoms are self-induced or caused by the obsession of insomnia recurring. I tend to get sleepy when I'm sitting or laying down. Because of the pandemic, everything's been shut down and there's just isn't much to do. The sleepiness is most heavy during midday, and I guess that's normal because isn't that when everyone takes a nap? I'm now wondering if I should too. Will it hurt my internal sleep drive? I sleep between 5 to 7 hours each night, and every morning just seems to be the same. I used to think I'll always have insomnia because I can never forget the experience of having it. I used to think that I won't be able to sleep normally again like I used to because my brain still remembers the experience, and to be 100% normal, I need to completely forget that I had insomnia, like I developed amnesia or something. Is it possible to sleep like before again and be sleeping really well despite still thinking about sleep and being mildly anxious that insomnia will return? I realize it is now completely impossible to forget about the experience, but it is still possible to try to accept it as best as I can and be mentally prepared if it happens. Will that be enough to sleep well? Okay. So John, I think the way I read it, by the way, yes, it's true that kind of early afternoon, there's sort of like a natural dip in our alertness level that we, in many cultures, we have a siesta and sort of that thing. So that's pretty typical, yeah. And now I heard two questions here. I think all my symptoms are self-induced and caused by the obsession of insomnia recurring. And the other one was like, can I sleep during the day? And the third one was sort of, can I not forget about it, but will it be, will just like try to accept the best I can, will that be helpful to me? So let's go over these three questions. I actually, again, want to try to introduce some NATO concepts here. So we'll start with one that's called a small potato. And that is, let me add that here. What is a small potato? Well, that is something that you think may have a consequence, but actually doesn't, okay? A classic one is this one. How harmful is it? How bad is it for me if I sleep in a little bit in the morning, okay? And the reality of that is that depending on how you think about it, it doesn't matter at all, or it can have some impact, okay? But in itself, sleeping in a little bit, sleeping during the day, in itself, is a small potato. That in itself does not matter. And so what's the important teaching point here? Well, it's this one. let's say someone falls asleep at, you know, 5 p.m. or whatnot, wakes up, you know, 30 minutes later and goes, oh my gosh, I've destroyed my chances of sleeping. I shouldn't have slept. Now I cannot sleep. And I know I'm not going to sleep tonight. Dang it. Why did I do that? You know, becomes super upset and hard on himself, goes into the self-judgment thing, you know, frustration thing. Then that's probably going to have an impact on their sleep because they're thinking so much about it. Another person falls asleep, same thing, and goes, oh, I fell asleep. Oh, that was nice. You know, I can't sleep. There's nothing wrong with my sleep system. Okay, cool. I'll probably sleep good tonight. See, that person will probably not have any problem sleeping. Common sense, of course, if somebody sleeps like 4 hours during the day, you know, then you probably won't sleep at night. But again, sleeping a little bit, taking a nap, sleeping in, that is a small potato. If you don't think of it as a problem, it is no problem. Very good. So we introduced that one as well. Now, John, you are asking another very good question, which is like, I think a lot of what I'm experiencing is basically driven by my fear of having another episode of insomnia or a more intense episode of insomnia. And this is what Ellie talked about, which we call like the big one. Let's write this down. The big one is like that real intense episode of trouble sleeping that you may have had at some point that you now you're kind of afraid of that coming back again. So when you are in that position where you are have this kind of like low level anxiety, you're wondering if it's going to come back. The natural thing that you want to do is you want to like find a cave. Let's call it that. Find a cave. What I mean by that? Well, I mean, let's say, you know, the brain is always there to keep you safe, right? And when you've had the big one, the brain basically interprets that as there's a big threat out there, okay? It thinks that there's a lion or a tiger or something like that out there, a real tangible threat, which there isn't. That's the whole confusion with insomnia. There's no real threat. It's just a perceived threat. The brain has started to think that being awake is a threat and it has to be safe from that. So when you've had the big one, you often find a cave, meaning like you do things like you kind of maybe find out rituals like, you know, if I just make sure I'm in bed by this time and I have some sleepy time tea and I get up in the morning at this time, it's like, then I'm all right. So that's kind of finding a cave, doing things that you think are sort of keeping you safe. But the problem there is that you always live in fear. You know, you always think that the big one can come again. And then, you know, and even though you're kind of coping, you're doing okay, that fear will always be there. And guess what? When this is a stressful event in your life and you really sleep little, then it's like, oh no, here it is again. And you can have a lot of trouble sleeping again. The big one can come back again. So what should you do when you're living in fear of the big one? Well, I'm going to introduce I think I talked about this before, but let's repeat this very, very helpful. Let's call it a formula. When you are willing to experience X, you neutralize, neutralize the fear of X. Okay, check this out. Very important, particularly when it comes to the big one. So the reason it's not helpful to be in the cave where you feel safe is that you still think there's a threat. There's still a threat out there. You kind of just manage to escape it for a while. So how can you get to a place of liberation, freedom, where you don't live in fear anymore? This takes a lot of courage. You have to face it. You have to be willing to experience X because then you neutralize the fear of it. When you tell the brain that, okay, if I have the big one again, I'm willing to experience that. I am willing to go through that another time. Then the brain goes, oh, okay, you're telling me there is no threat or you're willing to experience that. Well, then I don't need to warn you about it. Then you've neutralized that fear. And the beauty of this is like, you don't have to have the big one again. If you're willing to experience it, you know, if you're showing the brain this lesson in fearlessness, you are no longer in the cave. You're in the open. There, you've shown the brain there's no threat. There's nothing you fear of and you'll do really well. So that's the big one there. There's the big one there, John. I hope that formula was helpful to you. And then we have finally here the question of memory. So let me write this down. I think of it as kind of like nuclear material from like a nuclear plant. Let's talk about this. So It is true that, of course, like insomnia is a little like PTSD. You've had this like real intense episode. You had a lot of fear, a lot of anxiety. You've been scared, etc. And even as you've gotten to a place where, let's say you're out of the cave, like you don't have the intense fear of it anymore, but you still have the memory of it, right? And the memory is not pleasant, and you would like not to have that. But yes, there's no active way. You can't like decide like I'm gonna make this memory go away. You know, that's impossible. But you can think of it, the way I think of it is like this, that, you know, when you have like a nuclear plant that, you know, that produces this nuclear material that is actually not, that's harmful, that you have to do something with. So what we do is we store them in these like deposits underneath the mountain. And every so often, the half-life of that nuclear material is half, like the harmfulness is halved, right? And it's sort of like that with the memories too. They don't completely go away. Even if you half, you never reach zero. You'll always remember it. But the strength of it, you know, the intensity of it will be halved. Maybe every 2 months it'll be halved. Like every 2 months you'll the intensity of those memories will be half. So just let them sit there, and at some point they won't bother you at all. Hope that helped, John, and let me know if there's any follow-up questions on this one. Here's a live question from Jay Custer. Been watching your channel for some time now, Daniel. Keep it up. Been trying to recover my sleep and other symptoms after some bad experiences with trazodone. Thank you so much for the support, Jay Custer. And, you know, any questions come up, please let me know. Absolutely. Thanks for the support again. All right. Let us head over to, I believe this is the last emailed question that we have from today. Anybody that's here live, please feel free to ask a question, of course. And Sabiha said the following. It makes sense what you do. It makes sense. I think this, I don't know exactly what this refers to, but something in the video. It makes sense. But what do you do when you understand everything, but are still obsessed and continuously worry about insomnia so much, so it just overtakes your life? All I can think and worry about is how can I sleep better? I know the harder I try, the worse it gets, but I can't stop it. In the past, all I needed was one or two good nights of good sleep, and I'll get my sleep confidence back and not have problems at all. This time, I've been struggling for 8 months with 10 to 12 days of continuous sleep, then regress, and it's back to another few months of worry and anguish. This is horrible. Please help me. I've tried everything but can't seem to resolve this. This is a very important question, Sabiha. And basically, the way I summarize this question is, I am obsessing about sleep, and I know that's not good for me. That's not helpful to me, because the more I obsess about it, the more attention towards sleep, and the less do I sleep. But how do I stop obsessing? And actually, I want to start here, because this is very similar to something we hear all the time, which is, I stopped caring. Let's write this down. This is one of the most common things you hear somebody say that has gone from a place where they struggle a lot with insomnia to not struggling at all. I stopped caring. I just don't care as much, right? When you hear that at first, it's like, how do you do that? How can you not care about your sleep? And in reality, it is actually not 100% accurate. It is not that people you hear in the success stories here on the channel have stopped caring. They still care. I care. Everybody cares. Everybody cares about their sleep. You know, we should. That's completely normal. But what does it actually mean? Actually, let's see. Can I modify this? Actually, I stopped caring. Actually means I became less attached. Okay, that's what it means. So you know, and what does that mean? That means the person who says I stopped caring actually means that I come to a place where if I sleep a lot or I sleep little, both are acceptable to me. In other words, they're allowing themselves to experience a night of little sleep, and when they allow it, when they say that's okay, it's okay if that happens, then again, everything becomes, there's less pressure, they have this okayness, and things go in a very nice direction. Why am I talking about this, okay? It's because it's very similar to what you talked about. I stopped obsessing, okay? This is something you often hear people say that have gotten to a place where they sleep well. I stopped obsessing. And then the question becomes like, is that really like, how do you do that? How do you stop obsessing? It's basically saying that I stopped thinking about something. How do you stop thinking about something? If I tell you, don't think about the pink elephant, stop thinking about the pink elephant. You cannot think about a pink elephant right now. Don't think about a pink elephant. course, you're going to think more and more and more about a pink elephant. All right. So if you hear that, like somebody says, I stopped obsessing, and then you're like, I got to stop obsessing, you're going to obsess even more. Okay. So weirdly, what does this mean? Well, if someone says, I stopped obsessing, that actually very weirdly means they allowed themselves to obsess. Okay. And there's no other way, because if that person had really, really tried to stop obsessing, they would be obsessing more. The only way you can stop obsessing, or I shouldn't say stop obsessing, I take it back. The only way you can get to a place where you're not obsessing is allow yourself to obsess. Okay. And now this sounds like kind of crazy, but I think you're getting the, I think you're probably, you know, at some level, this probably makes sense. Okay. But how can we get this more solid? We're going to talk about the train analogy. Okay. The train analogy, very important one. So imagine that you are taking a walk in your town and you see your friend about to cross the railway tracks, and there's a train coming, and you see this is going to end bad. This is no good. So you tell your friend, hey, Susie, watch out. What happens? Susie just keeps walking. And what do? You become even more worried. You got to help your friend. You go, hey, Susie, you shout really loud. And guess what happens now? Susie covers her ears and she keeps walking. And now you go completely ballistic. You're super, super scared. You start throwing rocks at her. You shout, you know. And then finally, your friend turns around and says, hey, Daniel, there's nothing going on. Can't you see? This is we're shooting a movie scene here. And you're like looking around, and you're like, oh, okay, that's what's happening. There's actually not a real train. It's just a prop. There's nothing going on. Suddenly you feel like, oh, there's actually no need to warn Susie, because there's no problem. And the only thing you feel, though, is kind of like, I wish she could have just told me that, so I didn't need to get worked up. Okay, this is the train analogy, a key NATO analogy. And what does this mean? Well, in this analogy, your brain is the person that's trying to do the warning, and you're the person who doesn't want to listen, okay? And what does that have to do with obsessing? Well, obsessing is really your brain is trying to warn you, okay? It thinks that it's a real threat out there. It thinks that it's a real train out there. And it goes, what if you can't sleep? What if this happens? What if you don't do that? What if you do that? And the more you go like, blah, 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 I don't want to hear, then you go into obsessing. You just cannot stop those thoughts from happening. The more you try to stop those thoughts, the more you go into obsessing, right? So how do you go in the opposite direction? How do you do like the person in the example who says, okay, I'm listening and there is no train. How do you do that? You gotta listen, okay? And how do you listen to the brain when it's obsessing? Well, two practical things. One is a daily thought download. Just take some time during the day and write down all the things. The more, the better. Write down all the things you obsess about and take maybe 10 minutes, not more, write down all the things. Without any intent or purpose or anything, just to show the brain, I'm listening, okay? But I think the even more effective one is to be willing to go there, which means when the brain is telling you that if you don't sleep, you're gonna go crazy, then you literally imagine going crazy. You're like, okay, I wonder what that experience would be. I'm gonna listen to the brain. I'm gonna go where it's warning me about. And when you go where the plane is, when you're willing to go in your mind, your imagination, where the brain is, you know, warning you about, then there's no reason to warn you anymore. You are listening. You're allowing the obsessing to happen. You're allowing yourself to obsess. You're not being hard on yourself for that. You're actually allowing it to happen. And then the brain goes like, okay, she's listening. I don't need to push this anymore. That's the way. That is the way. Okay, I hope that helped, Sabia. And we have some live comments here from Ellie. Hi, Daniel. So happy and thankful to say that I've been sleeping great. It's been 1 month. The sleep is normal. Fantastic. Love it. Happy to say that education has been the key. Also, I'd like to say that by controlling the levels of anxiety has been key to sleeping better. Like you say, the key is to teach our brains not to fear. This is fantastic. And you know, it actually ties so well into what we just said here, which is when somebody reads this, Ellie, they probably, and if you're live with us, please comment on this. But when somebody reads this, they're going to be like, how can I control the levels? How can I control my anxiety? But in Ellie's case, she already answered how. Education has been the key. Anxiety comes from a place of like fear of the unknown. I don't know what's happening. I don't understand it. I'm really scared. You learn about sleep. You learn about insomnia. You understand your own mind. And then that evaporates. Okay. Awesome, Ellie. Super, super glad. And this wouldn't have happened if you weren't willing to do some, you know, learning, et cetera. So this is so cool. Lovely C says, hi, Ellie. 100% agree. Awesome. Johan says, hi, Daniel. In a case that I don't feel sleepy in the bed window, in the case I don't feel sleepy, could I go to bed a little bit more late? Absolutely. So here, many, many things are important here. And Ellie, I'm going to get to your question as well. And you too, lovely C. But let's stay on this one for a second here. Where should we start this one? Okay, here. So a sleep window is, or a bedtime window, or, you know, sleep restriction, whatever you want to call this, is like you decided that I'm going to get up at this point and I'm, you know, not going to go to bed maybe before this point or something like that. It is absolutely essential to understand what the purpose is of having a sleep window, having a bed window, or whatever you want to call it. It is not a tool for forcing yourself to sleep or producing sleep drive. It is a tool for letting go, okay? So again, if somebody is spending like 10 hours trying to sleep real hard, that is not helpful, because trying to sleep is what makes you not sleep. So if you say, I'm gonna give myself a little less time for sleep, that's a way of like letting go of control, ceding control, accepting that there is no control. And when you don't try to control sleep, it comes your way. So one question here is like, could I go to bed a little later? Absolutely. I think actually what's the most helpful is decide like, I'm going to stop checking the time, for example, at 10 p.m. and I'm going to have an alarm at 6 a.m. I have this 8-hour window that is timeless. I don't know what the time is. If I feel sleepy, I go to bed. If I don't feel sleepy, I do something I like to do. That way you don't have, this question actually becomes sort of irrelevant. You don't even have this question. Could I go to bed later? Yeah. Do whatever feels like the least pressure, you know? There's absolutely no, there's no hard rules at all. Like everything is just guidelines. So that was number one. And number two, just a quick comment on this one is that when you don't feel sleepy, oftentimes your mind goes into something is wrong. I don't feel sleepy. But that's not the case. You know, the sleepiness is there. The sleep drive is there within. It's just masked by some hyperarousal, anxiety, really. So don't let that throw you off. Don't think that's anything abnormal. So just with education and understanding more, the hyperarousal will come down and you will actually start feeling sleepy again. So Juan, I hope that was helpful to you. And Lovely C says, I always like to just tell myself that my obsessive thoughts are just thoughts, or even better, just brain sentences. He'll go, yeah, I wonder where do you, I don't know where I'm curious to hear what you picked up on that one, brain sentences, but that's exactly what I say too, that a thought is a sentence in your brain. It's just something that the brain makes up. It's not even, I'm not actually the producer of my thoughts. It's not like I'm a little mini version of myself in there like thinking. It's just like thoughts are just pop up and we become aware of them. And when you know that, you don't give them so much credibility, that can truly help. Ellie asked, do you coach for insomnia only or other mental illness? Because your devices and your education is also helping with anxiety and OCD. You know, this is so, so important in a sense that, or important was the wrong word. It's so true. They all come from the same place. With this insomnia, OCD, anxiety, they all come from, there's some type of discomfort and you don't want to have that. You want to get away from that. You want to escape that. And the more you try to escape, the more power that thing has over you. So I don't do any other coaching for insomnia, but at some point I've thought about that, like branching out and talking more about anxiety and other things. But for now, it's only insomnia. Travis says, my symptoms are what keep me stuck so much because it's a constant reminder of what creates the fear cycle, causing me to fear for my life. Will my body really be okay despite how horrendous it feels? 100%. So very important question. And I think for me, you know, and it says, other than that, I made good progress. That's fantastic. Fantastic. And I know Travi has made a, you know, done a lot of work, and that's fantastic. I'm so happy to read that. But okay, my symptoms are what keep me stuck, so it's a concern of mine. Actually, let me do this. Let me talk about this thing here called the battle scars, which is another concept that I think is so important. Battle scars. Okay, so we just write this down. And so when you have symptoms like, you know, you feel maybe you're super tired, you're exhausted, your eyes are itchy, you have this like tinnitus, you feel physically ill, you're nauseous, you have pains, like tingling stuff and things like that. Those are what I call battle scars, okay? They are evidence of a battle, you know? They are evidence of a struggle. They are the product of like trying to escape, you know? The more time you spend trying to feel like, how can I not feel this way? What's wrong with me? Reading up on this, going to a forum, the more kind of effort and attention you divert towards like trying to escape, that is the battle, that is the struggle, that is the fight. But the battle scars are not evidence that there is an enemy or an opponent. There is none. It's all perceived. There is no real threat or enemy. But it's the battle that creates the scars. And I think the power of this is understanding that when the battle ends, then the battle scars go away. You know, when I'm no longer trying to escape, then everything that I'm feeling will fade away. That is super important, Travi. And I hope that made sense. And I also want to say, will my body really be okay despite how horrendous I feel? This one is a yes. If you listen to the success stories, for example, there are people who have had like, they've been deep in the hole, you know, they've had tremendous amount of symptoms. And once they have like understood everything is clear, the battle has ended, the dust has settled, they feel good again. Sleeping little, anxiety feelings cannot harm you. You know, no matter how it seems like that, they can't. And by the way, the whole idea with anxiety, the whole reason the brain has that emotion is to make us do stuff, get away, like save yourself. You know, it's meant to make us feel like we're going to die. You know, that's the whole purpose of it. But yes, Travi, like, and by the way, you've done, made good progress. Stay on the path you're on. More good things will come your way. Let me remove this banner. Okay. So other than that, we have, okay, here. I focus entirely too much on the fact that it's been over 7 months calmly. I feel like I started the healing too late. You know, it's whenever you focus on time, it's true that it's not helpful. But you know, I've come across so many people that, you know, they've had trouble sleeping for like years, you know, simply because they didn't come across any helpful teaching for many, many years. And then they're like, I wish I would have found you like 5 years ago. Travi, you're here, like you found this, you know, after only a couple of months. I know it's a long time, but still. And you know, as long as you're just like, don't be hard on yourself, be kind to yourself. It's been several months, but you're on the right path. And you'll get there anytime, Travi, anytime. All right. Monica, I've always been so attached to my thoughts. Big insight, super, super important insight. And again, like I'm really getting into like reading about mindfulness and things of that nature, but thoughts are just sentences in our brain. They're just these things that pop up in our brain. They don't mean anything really. And when you get that detached, when you can look at your thoughts from the outside, they have so much less power over you. All right, let's end there. Let's end on that good note. And thanks everyone for being here. And I'll be back with more soon. Until then, take care. And by the way, anyone who wants to work more with myself, we have our self-coaching master program where there's a support group. I moderate 1 week, Coach Michael 1 week, and then there's also Bedtime, which is an app. You can use your smartphone to get sleep smart. I just came up with that a minute ago. It wasn't that good. But anyway, Bedtime is there too. So thanks, everyone. And I'll be back real soon. Until then.